Hello and welcome to this edition of DE Cast. My name is Rob Bagby. I'm a developer evangelist for Microsoft Corporation. And in this edition, I'm going to be talking about the RESTful architectural style of Azure Table Storage, as well as the role ADO.NET Data Services plays. Hopefully by now you've got a good feel for what REST is. If not, you can go out to my blog, robbagby.com, and take a look at a bunch of articles I've written on the subject. But for the purposes of this, screencast, I'm going to just give you a 30 seconds overview of what REST is. Think of REST as an architectural style that really treats services the way we treat the browsable web. We embrace HTTP, so we use the appropriate HTTP verbs: get, post, put, delete. We treat everything as a resource that has a unique URI, and so we're able to get at if we issue a get to a specific URI, we're meaning to fetch it. If we issue a delete to that same URI, we're meaning to perform a delete action. As well as we use standard representation formats to move data around. So we use things like Atom or XHTML, representation formats that are well documented and well consumed. So with that, we chose to expose our Azure Table Storage data RESTfully because of the reach factor. It's very easy to consume those types of services. We took it a step further and decided to utilize ADO.NET Data Services to implement this RESTful architectural style. And we did that for a few reasons. One, it greatly eases the burden of exposing data RESTfully. But you might assume that there's some other reasons that played a pretty big factor in there as well. One, ADO.NET Data Services adopted or created a standardized and well-documented URI addressing scheme, which makes it very easy for consumers of the service to understand how to cruft up the URI to a specific resource, as well as do some value-added things like maybe run some queries or to limit the result sets back. So that standardized URI addressing scheme is pretty big. But perhaps the biggest is that we shipped some client libraries with ADO.NET Data Services. So we've got a .NET client library and a Silverlight library and an AJAX library. And these greatly ease the burden of making these HTTP calls. In fact, they abstract away the complexity of making an HTTP call altogether and allow you to just work on the object layer. So we'll see as we go through these demos the importance of those client libraries. But just remember that ADO.NET Data Services implements a RESTful architectural style, and you don't have to use these client libraries. Any stack that issues an HTTP request can talk to Azure Table Storage. So we're going to go ahead and start by taking a look at ADO.NET Data Services outside the realm of Azure Table Storage, and we'll look at an example of ADO.NET Data Services that's exposing an Entity Framework Entity Data Model. So here I am inside of a website where I've already added in an Entity Data Model from the Entity Framework. So you can see I've got an entity named Wine, and it's got a relationship to a Wine type entity and a couple other entities here. I've also already exposed this thing via ADO.NET Data Services, and here's the SVC file. So because ADO.NET Data Services implements a RESTful architectural style, I can use the browser just to issue some gets to varying resources, and we'll get back our standardized representation formats. So what you see here is I've issued an HTTP get to the service root. Earlier I mentioned that one of the niceties of ADO.NET Data Services is the structured addressing scheme of their URIs. Well, this is the first part of that addressing scheme, the service root. When you issue a get to that root, you get back a nice Atom feed of the entities that have been exposed. Now I can add to that service root a resource path to get to the URI to a specific resource, such as maybe Wines. And when I do, I get back a format or a representation format of Atom, which we've extended to pass back some wine information. So you get back things like the vintage of a wine. And if we look at a couple of these things, this wine has a vintage of 2005 versus 2002, etc. Now, The third part of that URI addressing scheme is we can do some things like add in some query options, so we can get back maybe filtered sets of our wines. In this case, we want to get back just those wines that have a vintage of 2002. And so you can see the second wine, which earlier query was 2005. Now we're getting back just those wines that are 2002. So this structured URI addressing scheme makes it very easy to consume these to consume our services. Now, we can go beyond that and make it much easier by taking advantage of the client libraries. Before I do that, I want to show you one other tool that I hope you're aware of, which is Fiddler. Fiddler is a nice HTTP sniffing tool. It allows you to look at HTTP traffic. I'm going to go ahead and use its request builder functionality to act as an HTTP client. So we're going to click execute there, and you can see that I got back my results. And I got back a nice bit of data, the same data that we saw inside of IE. One of the benefits of using Fiddler is that you can do things like change the HTTP request header. So if I want to do something like get back just JSON, I can do change the accept header to application WAC JSON and click execute. And when I get that data back, now I'm going to get back the data in JSON format. We're going to see, the reason why I'm bringing this up is when we start getting into Azure Table Storage, if I want to do these requests by hand, I'm going to have to add in my own custom headers. And so you'll see, or not custom headers, standard headers, but I wanted to introduce this tool to you. Now, this is all well good for testing using IE and using Fiddler, but when we're working with an application, we want to consume data, and I don't want to have to use things like the web client or any of the other HTTP clients that we have within our stack. I can take advantage of, if I'm on writing in .NET, I can take advantage of our .NET client libraries. And so let's go ahead and take a look at that. What I'm going to do is right-click on the solution and choose to add a new project. And I'm just going to go ahead and add in a console application. And ADO not date, that's fine. And we'll just call this ADODS client. I'll click OK. And what I want to do is I want to add a service reference to my service. And when we do that, we're going to get a proxy class automatically generated for us, as well as a context class. We'll just call this Coho Services. And we'll inspect the proxy code that gets generated for us. We also get a reference automatically set to system.data.services.client. At least I believe it automatically does that. Yes, it does. And so this is the ADO.NET Data Services client libraries. We get that reference already set for us, but the real biggie we get is this nice little client-side proxy. So if I double-click on that, it's going to bring it up inside of the object browser. And if we start to spelunk through here, as I get down, you can see I got a client-side class generated for me for each of those entities that I wanted to work with, meaning that we can now work with these results not as that stream of Atom XML, which would be relatively difficult to parse, but as objects. We're going to automatically get our response deserialized into these client-side objects. Let's go ahead and take a look at the code that actually got generated for us on the client side. To start with, you can see we got a class called CohoDB Entities, and that implements data service context. The data service context represents the runtime context for any data service. So data services themselves are stateless, but the context in which we interact is not. And so we need to be able to maintain the state between interactions in order to support stuff like concurrency. So that's the role of this data service context. Now you'll also see that this data service context has a collection of, or exposes a bunch of, let me see if I can get down to it, there we go, exposes a bunch of data service queries, one for each of my entities that I wanted to expose. And so that just represents a specific query against the store, and that query is defined using the URI syntax. And we'll see what that means in just a second. It's probably best illustrated just by writing a little code. So let's do that. Let me go back here to my program.cs and just write a little program to consume these proxies and that data service context. So the first thing I want to do is create a new URI. And so I'll just create a new URI, and that needs to be the URI to my SVC file. So I'm just going to bring that up. I've forgotten the URI to that, so I'm just going to go ahead and do that. Let's and I think I got one too many parens there. And we can bring this down a little bit. Now I can create a new CohoDB entities, cohoservices.cohoDB entities, and let's go ahead and just bring in that namespace. Clean it up. We'll call it Coho equals new. And I want to pass it that URI. And now I can write a little query. I can use link, actually. So I can say var wines equals from w in coho.wines. And let's add in a little where clause. Let's make this a little more complex. Where w.wineType dot wine type name, so I've traversed a relationship into another entity, equals reds. And so I'll select W. Now, because I've traversed this relationship, I need to actually tell it, hey, let's go ahead and automatically pull that relationship information in this query. So I need to just call an expand. And let's just tell it to go ahead and bring in the wine type information when it makes that call, and it's effectively going to create a join query. So now we can iterate over the results. Having a little trouble with the typing. And let's just do a console.write line, and we'll just say we'll put maybe the short wine name, and then in parentheses the wine type, just to prove that we got the appropriate response. And we'll just say wine.shortwineName, and let's do wine.wineType.wineTypeName, and so we're good to go. Do a little console.readline, and let's run this up. We need to set this as our startup project. And let's run it. And we can see we got our results. We got back just those red wines that existed in our backend data source. And so you can see we didn't really have to be concerned with, you know, anything that had to do with HTTP issuing these requests. That was all abstracted away for us. And so that shows kind of the power of ADO.NET Data Services. Now let's jump in and take a look at some Azure-specific specific examples. When you receive your Windows Azure token, you also get access to the Azure Services Developer Portal. And this is where you create your projects, including your storage projects. And as you can see here, I've created one called Bagby. Right here is the URI to my table storage endpoint. It's bagby.table.core.windows.net. You can also see I was given some primary access keys. And these are what we use to sign our messages or sign our requests. And they're used to authorize those requests to make sure not just anybody can call into your specific storage account. Now this is non-trivial, so what I did was I wrote a little sample application to essentially generate that signature so that we can go ahead and test Azure table storage by issuing some REST requests through Fiddler. So let's open up this little sample app I wrote. It's just a little WPF app that just walks through the process of creating that signature. So we start with some input data, including the date, our account name, our table name, and then this is my shared key. I'm using a password text. First thing I do is construct the URI. It's the URI to my table storage, bagby.table.core.windows.net. We saw that inside of the portal. And then slash my table name. We then take the date and convert it to GMT format. And then we get our create our message to sign, which is really the GMT date, end of line character, slash account name, slash table name. And this is the message to sign when using shared key lite. We then compute a hash-based MAC code using SHA-256. If you want to see what that code looks like, I've got it out on my blog. You can go take a look at it on my blog, but it's right here. You can go take a look at it on robbagby.com. There's an associated blog post to this screencast. We run through that logic, and we sign this message, and here's the signed message right there. We then use that to construct my authorization HTTP header. It's authorization colon shared key light space, and then your account name colon, and then that signed message. We then have to add in a few other HTTP headers, the XMS date, which is the same as this date right here, and then the accept header and the accept care set. The accept header is, in this case, I'm listing Atom. Azure Table Storage currently doesn't support streaming back JSON, but if it did, it would be application WAC JSON. We may do so in the future. But regardless, I can use these HTTP headers to issue my call to Azure Table Storage now. So let's open up my friend Fiddler. We'll go over to the request builder. Let me clear out the results. I'll copy those, copy and paste those headers right in there. And let me go grab that URI, paste that in, and let's issue our GET request. Double click on the response, which is at 200, so I know the data came back. And we can see I got my 200 okay. Everything was great. I got a result back, an Atom formatted response, and we've extended Atom here, and we're getting back some of our wine specific information, like the short wine name, Cojo Sauvignon Blanc and vintage, etc. So although we've chosen to expose the Azure Table Storage using ADO.NET Data Services, it's really just a means of implementing a RESTful architectural style. And so we can just issue HTTP gets to fetch. If I issued a delete to a specific resource, we would be able to delete that as well. Let's take a look at one of the other advantages I talked about of ADO.NET Data Services by consuming the .NET client libraries. And we illustrated one of the benefits here by taking advantage of these this standard means to construct a URI. Let's see how everything works with the client libraries. So I've got a little console application here, and clearly I want to take advantage of the .NET client libraries for ADO.NET Data Services. But we saw that there was a little extra that we needed there. We need to go beyond just what those libraries provide, because we need to do things like sign our messages. And so for that reason, when we shipped the Windows Azure SDK, we shipped a sample application called the Sample Client that kind of provides that additional functionality to the out-of-the-box ADO.NET Data Services client libraries. So let me just go ahead here and add in that project. And it's just this storage client project. I think I called it sample client, but it's called storage client. And this this is going to add in that signing logic as well as some other goodies. Let me go ahead and set a reference to that. So let's just add a reference. We'll add a project reference to the storage client. Let me add another reference to the ADO.NET Data Services client library, system. Let's see, it's .data.services.client, and we're good to go. So now what we need to do is, before we can start writing any code to target the data in Azure Table Storage, I need to generate the class that will essentially deserialize the response into. So if I'm going to go fetch a wine like I did in that Fiddler example, I need to have a wine class that I'm going to deserialize that into. I also need to have my context class that I work through. The same concept as the context we saw in ADO.NET Data Services. So let's do that. Let me go ahead and add in. Let's just go ahead and add in a class, and we'll just call it wine. And I'll click Add. And I'm going to go ahead and pause the recording and write the code. And so you don't have to watch me doing that, because I'm going to go through creating one of these in a future screencast. So I've completed writing my types. Let's take a quick tour. I've got my wine type here, which just has some props that expose wine information, like the vintage, the bottle price, the wine name, the ID, etc. And I've got a couple of constructors. I've got this convenience constructor that allows me to new up a new wine with a bunch of data, and then I've got this default constructor. You'll also notice that my wine type implements table storage entity. Let's take a look at that. Table storage entity adds to our class some of the required properties for table storage. So if you're going to add an entity to Azure Table Storage, you have to have a couple properties, including a timestamp, a partition key, and a row key. The partition key, that tells us what data needs to exist on the same partition. Data with different partition keys, we're free to move about for scalability's sake. So if you need to query over the same data, it needs to have the same partition key. And the row key combined with the partition key is the unique key for an entity. So we add those concepts in by implementing table storage entity. And you'll see also that when I set my wine ID, I go ahead and set the row key. Or if you use this convenience constructor, we call into our base constructor, which goes ahead and sets the partition key and the row key. And you'll see I'm setting the partition key to everyone the same. That's because there are only 12 records or so, 11 records, and so it's not important. In future screencasts, we'll talk more about how to model our data appropriately. You'll see I also created a data context, very similar to how we created our data context in ADO.NET Data Services, except for here you'll see that we're implementing table storage data service context. Let's take a look at that. Table storage data service context implements data service context, the context object we saw earlier in the first demo. Now it adds in one real key piece here. Well, it adds in more than one, but the big key piece to me is we wire up an event handler to the sending request event. And so when that gets fired, when we're sending every request, or prior to sending the request, this method gets called. Let's take a quick look at it. Inside of data context sending request is where we go ahead and sign our request. So this method, sign request for shared key light, essentially walks through the logic I showed you earlier from my WPF application. So by essentially implementing table storage data service context and taking advantage of the underneath that the ADO.NET data services .NET client libraries, we're completely abstracting away, making the HTTP call, making those signatures, adding in the HTTP headers, all of those complexities, and making it just spot on easy to consume Azure Table Storage. So let's see. Let's go ahead and do one more thing before that. Just point out that I've added in an app.config file that has the information that we need in order to make our calls. It's got my account name, which is Bagby. So we're now able to construct the URI to my account. We've got my account shared key. That's the key that we're going to use to sign our message. And then my table storage endpoint, which is table.core.windows.net. So we're pretty good to go here. We can now just write our little client application. So let's get to it. I'm over here in my console app. I'm just going to go ahead and create a storage account info. And that's another helper class we've got that just goes ahead and pulls in our account information from the configuration. And so we can just call a nice helper method, get default table storage account info from configuration, and we'll go ahead and pull all that information from that config file. Now I can go ahead and say table storage dot, and I'm going to go ahead and tell it to create tables from model. And so I'm just going to tell it, hey, go ahead and take a look at my my context object. And I think I called it Coho Data Context. Go ahead and take a look at that. And for every data service query you see exposed there, go ahead and create those tables for me in storage if they don't already exist. Now, mine actually already do exist, but this is how you would actually create tables in table storage if they didn't exist. Now I can write a little query. So I'll say Coho Data Context, and we'll just call Coho again. Equals new, I got the fat fingers. And I need to pass it the account information here. And now let's just write a little query. We'll say list of wines, we'll call it wines, equals coho.wines, and let's just get them all. So we'll just say to list. And now I can just iterate over those and say for each wine, W in wines. And we'll just do a console.writeline w.shortwineName, and just to prove that we can do it, and let's do a console.readline here, and let's run this up. So I've got that as my startup project. We run it, and you can see Without having to worry about making an HTTP call or any of those complexities, signing the message, we're able to very easily target tables storage. We can add to these queries and do something maybe a bit more interesting. Instead of coho.winestat.to_list, I can see add in like a where clause and say where w such that w dot I don't know wine type equals reds. I think there's a wine type. Yeah, equals reds, and we'll get back our reds again there. And so if we run this up now, we'll get a subset of just those wines that are red. So you can see that we get the full power of making those REST calls without having to do all of that work by taking advantage of the client libraries, our storage client, and by virtue of the fact that we chose to implement or expose these services via ADO.NET Data Services. I hope this screencast has been helpful in maybe demystifying a little bit of how ADO.NET Data Services plays a role in exposing Azure Table Storage. Thanks.